Okay, my name is Najiree Nixon, and I am 31 years old. Today is March 25th, 2023, and I'm speaking with Shay, who is my coworker. I am recording in Grosse Pointe, Michigan.
All right, sounds good. So we're going to start with a very basic question. Can you tell me about your childhood experiences, and your relationship with disability in your childhood?
Ooh, okay. So, I grew up in Detroit with my mom and dad. My mom was kind of like always a student. She was in school most of my childhood. My dad was the breadwinner. As I started school, though, it was never an issue like academically, but like my teachers definitely had to call my parents to the office a few times because of like I would interrupt class. And it was never interrupting class to, you know, like, oh, I'm just causing scenes or different things like that. I would get really bored. And when I'm bored, like, say I finish my assignment, like one of the first students to finish things. So yeah, now I'm about to stand up. I'm about to walk around the classroom. I'm going to go and look out the windows. And apparently, like, they don't want kids to do that. This was in, like, I want to say the first grade. Yeah, that's when, like, right after kindergarten, just like, you know. So they told my parents that they believed that I had ADHD. So they sent me to a specialist who, you know, talked to my parents about, like, what it meant. But they didn't really... Or at least I don't now as an adult looking back, they didn't really give them the specifics of what it is, what that meant. Like there were things where they told them like, oh, well, she'll grow out of it. And, you know, there's options for medications and, you know, stuff like this without really like explaining, like, first of all, what neurodivergency is. You know, there was no real understanding of the differences in how it presents, like how ADHD presents in like girls versus boys. And I want to say it was a really confusing time for both like me and my parents. My family didn't know that my mom actually had her own set of issues that were going on. And that was definitely like affecting school life for me. Cause then I started missing some classes and inevitably I had to like repeat the first grade. And that was, that caused a lot of shame for me going through school because then I was like always the oldest kid. And luckily for me, my birthday's late though. So I was able to kind of like lie where I'm just like, you know, like, oh, my birthday's just late. That's why I'm like the oldest in the class. But in all reality, like it was because of these series of you know, events that came with like my mom and her issues and then me trying to, you know, just be a kid and navigate school under other people's like direction. So it was kind of like difficult with that. After repeating the first grade, like I did end up being placed on Ritalin and I hated everything about that. It like forced me to be linear. It forced me to like kind of just be in this like robotic space, if that makes sense. Like I didn't feel like I had any of my own free will anymore. And it was absolutely, it was horrible to be completely honest. Like I don't really like being like super morbid, but no, it made things really like dark. I remember being like depressed and upset and, you know, I would be in these different therapist offices who, you know, Like they were white therapists. They, you know, couldn't really empathize with, you know, what I was going through, what's going on in my household, you know, and a lot of times like they're just charging your insurance, really. So like, you know, once they've written you that prescription and like they tell your parents, hey, just make sure she takes this, basically, you know, it it's just one of those things. And then like the thing that as an adult makes me think back to my childhood on how they didn't pick up on the autism, though, how it was only categorized just as like ADHD. They didn't even pick up on my dyslexia, like, because I always achieved in school, though. So it was never, like I said, this is why it really kind of messes with me now when we think about like how many kids were harmed back in the day, like, you know, the early 90s, and they, you know, were just told all of this false information, and these kids had to live through that, and they're struggling because this system isn't actually protecting them. It's kind of just putting a Band-Aid on something to make like the teacher's job easier, versus like understanding, like, you know, young education, like, you know, kids in like K through like fourth grade, you know, those are like really developmental years for those kids. And if you're just like doping them up on stuff just so like, you know, the teacher isn't pulling her hair out, like, I'm like, I'm sorry, teacher, maybe you're in the wrong profession. Like, you have to be able to deal with young children developing their identities, their selves, like, you know. So it really messed with me, you know, with that. So yeah, that was my introduction to like my disability and the very long time it was going to take me to fully actualize like what neurodivergency is, how that affects my life, you know, from a young kid all the way into being an adult now. And yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned your mom, and I know you were telling me a little bit about your dad. Like, how did your parents like impact your disability experience? I guess in more detail.
Yeah. So my mom wasn't officially diagnosed like bipolar until, that was what, 2000 and I want to say about like 2012, 2013, but there had been episodes before, you know, the full-blown diagnosis. There had been a lot of instances where I believe even she herself was kind of masking and like not trying to like let it be fully known, like just how bad the problem was. So there was a lot of like, I don't want to say like neglect in the sense that like, oh, she just wasn't there or wasn't capable, but it was just like because of whatever she had going on, it didn't allow her to be fully present like as a parent the way, you know, a child really needs that nurturing. So that put a big emphasis on like kind of me having to learn how to navigate life really on my own for the most part, because my dad, he was the breadwinner, so he's always working. And I think that is, you know, a story that a lot of like Black, you know, households feel like, especially the households where like the dad is present, you know, within the home. He's there and he's paying the bills, but he's not like physically there because he's always away making money to pay the bills. So there was like this emotional kind of like barrier really that was there for me in childhood where, you know, like, yeah, I'm okay. Like my mom's physically there, like she'll hug us or she'll, you know, like she'll be there. But like I said, because of her issues, she couldn't really like do too much. And then like if your dad's always gone working, then it's like, where are you really building that like emotional connection at, like at all? And then I think a lot of times there are situations to where like your dad will be like just upset because of how much he has to work and provide and do and like not have the time to be with his family, like, you know, the way he may want to. And then when you have a partner who does kind of continually like drop the ball because of whatever it is that, you know, they're dealing with. And it did make home life pretty tense. You know, as a kid, I definitely remember like arguments between my parents constantly. I remember, you know, like feeling really bad for my dad. Cause like at a certain point, like my mom, she like, you know, stopped getting me ready for school. She stopped doing my hair. She stopped, you know, like all of those things that would make it a little bit easier for like the other parent to, you know, just be able to exist. Now they have to pick up the slack. So then I remember when my dad started doing my hair and, you know, like when he completely took over and now he's taking me to school, picking me up from school, like he took on all that responsibility. And I have a younger brother too. So like, you know, it was like, and I think that's why I'm so proud of like where my relationship with like my dad is today versus like where it is, where it was, because like things were hard. And like when you really think about how much pressure gets put on a person, you know, because they have those responsibilities, you know, it can be like it's just hard. let's put it that way. So with my mom's like, you know, final, like when she finally was diagnosed bipolar and schizoaffective. So she like, they wouldn't say like full blown schizophrenic, but like, she's definitely having episodes where she's seeing things that ain't there and like creating a lot of scenarios that don't actually exist. And, you know, for me, it almost meant that like all of my issues kind of had to take a back burner, because I also had a little brother, like I said, and he needed someone there. So I essentially became like my younger brother's mom. Like he even to this day still like looks to me more as like, you know, his mother figure versus our actual, you know, mom. And that took a toll. that took a really heavy toll. And it kind of messed up me and my brother's relationship. Like as we became adults, because it's like, I didn't get to just be his sister, you know? So it's like, there's certain levels of like, you know, respect that you kind of, you know, demand at certain points. It's like, okay, yeah, I was your nurturer. I was, you know, taking care of you and stuff. But like, now that we're whole grown and I can look at you as a whole grown, like adult now, you can't, you know, just expect me to do all of the stuff that I used to do. Like that was for our survival. Like, you know, so, you know, it definitely made things difficult for us in the future, because things aren't always great, you know, between us, because like I said, like if you, you know, feel like I should just continue to coddle you and I should just continue to accept whatever type of behavior that you, you know, have, like, I can't do that anymore, like, because it's not benefiting me and it's definitely not benefiting you, you know? And it's like, I want him to be great. I want him to do his thing and stuff. It's just like, I just wish I could have just been his sister, you know? But like my dad, he stepped up in so many ways. That's why, you know, he's really, really, really important. He's like my favorite person in the world. And we used to have a really bad relationship. Like it used to be really bad. Like my dad did have anger issues, but like he worked through them. Like after him and my mom finally like separated. And then like he found a partner who really could be his partner. And she's actually like who I pretty much call mom now, like, cause things just got really bad between me and my actual mom as time went on. Because of her issues, she can't see reality for reality. So when I'm saying, hey, this is my reality with you, and then that's constantly ignored or, you know, deflected against, and like, I can't deal with that, you know, because like I've had to heal through so much trauma and so many difficult things to get to this place of wholeness with myself. And you want a relationship with me, but you can't acknowledge like what your behaviors actually did. And it's always this weird line that I feel like I'm treading, because like I don't ever want to, you know, be like, oh, I just dislike you because of your disability or your issue, and that's never the case. And that is definitely something that gets held over my head. But that's not the case. It's just the fact of you can't actually see me. And that's going to always be, you know, an issue. So I get to lean on my dad. And just like when we were kids, he still always steps up. And I will forever appreciate that, like the work he took to really heal himself from the traumas of dealing with that. Like dealing with a person with severe mental illness is difficult. It is difficult. And you don't want to ever just give up on that person. But like you also still have to think about like your own self-preservation. And that's a hard balance to try to manage. But like I said, after him getting away from that relationship, growing as a person, acknowledging the places that were lacking in my childhood and like owning up to that and like being able to actually hear me, it did wonders like for our relationship. And now we can literally talk about anything. I feel completely safe and comfortable, you know, even when there's things we disagree about. Like I know it's never, you know, coming from a place of like, well, I'm still going to try to control what you think and say. Like it's never like that. So yeah, there's total parallels between like my relationship with like my biological mom and, you know, my dad. Like, so
yeah. Do you have like extended family that you're in contact with or close to in any way? And if so, like, how has your experience been? Like, how has your relationship been with them, I guess, in relation to like your neurodivergence? Like, do you feel like they're accepting? They've been supportive? Are they a part of your support system in any way?
Yeah. So, like extended family, you mean like aunts,
uncles, okay, grandparents, yeah, cousins, things like that?
Yeah. So like I'm the closest with my dad's side of the family for sure. I still have a pretty decent relationship with my uncle, who's my mom's brother. But the vast majority of that side of the family, I just kind of like stayed away from, because there was issues where some of those individuals would take advantage of my mom, because they knew she had, you know, her own struggle she was going through, but they also knew like my dad was there, and if he's providing, she has money, so guess who they about to get it out of, type of deal. So I tend to stay away from a lot of that because it just doesn't feel safe, and I don't think they would really understand, you know, what I go through and not take it personally as to like, you know, why I don't really be around my mom too much, or, you know, like even them to a certain extent. So, you know, that's that. But when it comes to my dad's side of the family, like I'm really close with like my aunt, who's his sister, my grandmother, my cousin, and all of them are like super, super accepting of me. It did take a while for them to like understand some parts of like my identity, and different things. Cause I'm the odd one in my family. Like I'm the queer one. I'm the incredibly like expressive one. I'm the, you know, the one that's always gonna like, you know, fight for social justice causes and stuff. I'll put myself out there like that. And a lot of them are more reserved in that way. So when I started digging more into, like neurodivergency, finding out what it actually meant, what, like, I don't know, I guess like what I had to find out for me, and then I could finally start conveying those things to them, and then asking them, you know, like, hey, when we're doing family stuff, like keep this in mind, or, you know, please don't take these things about me personally. Like, I don't mean to come off this way, or, you know, it's never me purposely trying to be like condescending or me, like, you know, because a lot of folks on the spectrum get this, you know, that we get this rap for being like unemotional or really blunt or mean, or, you know, even when we're like just asking questions for clarification, like to a neurotypical person, they'd be like, you know, why would you even have to ask questions about that? And it's like, so I can understand. You know, and, you know, I always got this like rep as being like a smarty pants, like growing up. And I'm just like, I just like correctness. That's all it is. Like, I have a very high ethical and moral compass, and I don't like for things to be taken out of context. So I try to be like as specific, as detailed as, you know, so hopefully I'm not misunderstood, but somehow society still misunderstands us. But over the course of like time, they have learned like, oh, okay, Najee's not just, you know, being arrogant, or Najee isn't just being rude, or she isn't just, you know, like, there's like, she's actually really, really kind and really sweet. And she just like, you know, wants fairness, and, you know, she's just not afraid to speak up, or it's not a part of her like thought process to even like pause and not speak on things that seem wrong. You know, because I used to always get in trouble constant, like, especially in Black families, you cannot, like, you can't question your elders, you can't speak. And boy, that's all I used to do. And it was never to just like purposely put myself in trouble. Why would I do that? It's, I don't understand. This doesn't feel right to me, what you're saying. I need clarification. And I think that, you know, because of what I went through, now that makes my family understand more about like the autonomy of children, honestly, and like realizing like they're just little humans who are trying to figure things out too. Maybe we need to break this way that we just immediately chastise versus becoming curious about why this is occurring, you know? So like my family, you know, they really, they definitely ride for me, you know, at this point. And, you know, they were there witnessing everything from when my mom, you know, stopped being able to mom, to, you know, where I am now, fully actualized, understanding myself. And, you know, they support me. And that's really all I've ever wanted, for real. And I have that.
That's
so
good.
Yeah.
That's really good. I'm curious to know, like, outside of like your support system and your experiences with like being prescribed medications and figuring out that you didn't like them, like, in what ways have you learned to like cope and or navigate your experience, like as an adult? Like, how is it like still learning yourself as you grow, but also like what are your pillars of support that you have in your tool belt to help you make it day to day?
Yeah. So for that, 1000% is my spirituality. My entire childhood, I was bullied like every single day. There was not a situation where, you know, I went around like kids my age and tried to make friends and then I'm ostracized. You know, it's almost like I constantly was going through this like why me type of thing. And I felt so lonely. I felt, you know, and then I had like, you know, friends, but a majority of those friends were like other kids that were being like bullied and ostracized. And I used to defend them because I used to be like, you know, well, if folks gonna talk about me, that's gonna be what it's gonna be. I can't do nothing about that. But y'all not gonna talk about folks and make other people feel small in front of me. Like, I'm gonna tell you about yourself. So that also made it where I was more ostracized. But, you know, as I was trying to get support and help through, like, you know, my therapist and counselors and stuff at school, I'm just like, they are not hearing me, like, and they're really not doing anything. So, you know, I spent a lot of time just like with myself, a lot of time in like my backyard. I had a tree that was back there, and this tree was my best friend. Like, it was my absolute best friend. I used to talk to it. I used to just sit under it. I used to like stare up at the sky at it with it. And just like, I remember just always feeling this, like, I don't know. It was just like, there was always this other kind of presence or something. And I constantly tried to put into words what it was. I tried to, you know, and nothing ever really like clicked until like I got older. And, you know, I started learning more about like, you know, spiritualism. I started to learn more about like, you know, nature and the spirits that like, you know, dwell within nature and just like how everything is so truly interconnected. And that took me down a pretty deep like rabbit hole, especially like, you know, when the internet is a thing. And you start meeting other people through the internet, and they give you like these little clues and these little things. And then you take that and you follow it. And then I'm still like with myself, like most of the time. And I got into like meditation pretty heavy. And I'm a super nature chick. So I'm always out in the forest. I'm going to be in some lake. I'm going to be in some river. I'm going to be on top of some big old boulder. And I'm just out there meditating and just listening. And then there's just something that would like kind of wash over me that will always make me feel like, you know, you're going to be okay. You know, the things that you go through are, you know, your testimony that you're going to be able to use to like inspire other people, to help other people during their dark moments. Like, you know, don't ever feel like or think you're going through this for no reason or it's all in vain. Like it serves a bigger purpose. And, you know, eventually I found some like friends that were kind of in the same, you know, the same little circle of understanding that. And I just like through those connections, through constant meditation, through prayer. And then my family is really spiritual as well. They are Christian though. That's where we were like brought up in the church and stuff. Me, I'm not Christian. I definitely believe in the teachings of Jesus. He's one of my favorite ascended masters, but you know, I'm just not down with like the church and what they be doing. And it, you know, it, I'm sorry. I can't stand by something that's used as a method of control. And then we try to act like that's God's word, because the God I serve would never, ever be like, oh yeah, it's okay to hate this group of people and it's okay to take away rights of these people. I cannot stand by something, you know, like that. And also because of just like how touched it is by human hands and like, you know, you can edit and say and then give this to mass populations of people and now you got folks split. It's just like, nah, I feel like you got to go within. And that has always been just like this really sturdy strength, foundational like building block for me to get myself past a lot of like the darker times that, you know, I've gone through. And, you know, I see how that transcends throughout what I do in life, you know, and how I've been so blessed and how I have made it through certain things that like I definitely should not made it, you know, through. But you know, I believe in something bigger than me. And I believe that I work in tandem with that energy, that power source, God, whatever you want to call it. And yeah, that's my biggest, strongest tool in the toolbox. And I don't think that anything could ever make me fall because I got something that powerful behind me. Yeah. So
thanks for sharing that.
You're welcome.
Is there anything else that you would like to talk about during the session that maybe I haven't touched on already?
I don't think like as far as like anything you haven't touched on, I would just say like to people who may listen to this that, you know, it is like life can be hard, you know, when you are born into circumstances that are out of your control. When you live in a world that tells you, you know, who and what you are is in some way like less than others, is in some way wrong or incorrect, or that you need like fixing, don't buy into that. Like, you are created magnificently. You are created divinely. You are a part of source's essence. So there is nothing about you that is, you know, that is wrong. And if you are struggling, you find it hard to believe that, you know, reach out for support and help. There are people out here who do care and who are harbingers of love and who want to only see you make it because you exist and you should make it, you know? So, yeah, I would definitely say, like, reach out for support and don't just give up, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's the end of our session. And cool. Thanks for letting me interview you.
Thank you for having me.